Hello, this is Michael Steed from Kaplan Financial, and I'm here to talk about the Companies Act 2006. We've spoken before about this mighty act, so this is by way of a bit of an update. And the reason is simple. The Companies Act is so big that it required initially a 2-year implementation period, and this has now been extended to 3 years. So final implementation will not now be until October 2009. But along this road, there are some important milestones that affect us as AAT members and our clients. So what's it all about? What do I need to know? How does it affect me? What do I need to tell my clients? And does it affect LLPs? The scope of the Act is seemingly straightforward. It is to rewrite, to update, and to modernise company law. And the implications for us as AAT members and advisors is that there are lots of new issues and requirements that we need to get our heads around. The initial objectives of the Act included a couple of things which we need to note. The first is a think small first approach. Traditionally, the earlier Companies Acts have been directed towards the PLCs, with small private companies as a bit of a bolt-on. And this has been changed dramatically. In fact, it stood the whole approach on its head. Another key objective is to make it easier to set up and run a company. So what is the scope of the Act? It's simply gargantuan. It's the largest piece of legislation ever passed by Parliament. It's got some 1,300 sections, 16 schedules, and it restates and therefore repeals the 1985, the 89, and the 2004 Companies Act. It's less concise, but arguably it's much easier to understand and to apply. So what are the main changes? There's a much clearer scope for directors' duties. There's a greater use of electronic communication. There's now a minimum age for directors, that's 16, so you can't use your children anymore. There are some new rules for company names. And the objects clause has been removed from the memorandum. Now that's quite important. And the articles will now form the basis for the company constitution. And while we're talking about articles, there's going to be a separate and simpler model, articles of association. There's also, within the Act, a separate and comprehensive code of accounting and reporting requirements for small companies. Private companies will not need a company secretary. And there's no AGM unless you want to. And there are also some simpler rules on share capital. Now let's quickly remind ourselves about the timetable for implementation. Royal assent was granted on the 8th of November 2006. And with a slippage to October 2009, we've got phased introduction of some rules which we do need to know about. And this has been phased, the next phase being February 2009. We had changes in April 2007, again in October, April 2008, the 1st of October 2008, and we've got some lined up for February 2009 and the 1st of October 2009 when the Act will be fully implemented. Now, I'm not expecting you to remind yourself about all of these because most of this is on the Companies House website. And I will be highlighting just the important points for our businesses and for our clients. I think of the important changes on the 6th of April 2007, removal of the maximum age for directors of PLCs. It used to be 70, and now you can be any age as a director of a PLC. The point there is a simple one. There's never been any restriction in either the old acts or the new for private companies. Now here's something that will affect us. Directors will no longer be required to disclose their interests in shares in the company in the report and the annual accounts. So that saves a bit of ink. As far as the changes from the 1st of October 2007 are concerned, all companies, of course, have always been required to adopt articles of association. There's nothing new about that. And most small companies have adopted the default set known as Table A. The point to appreciate is that Table A has been amended to take into account the changes to company law. And these amended rules apply to all new companies that were incorporated on or after the 1st of October 2007. And to get a copy of these, I'd recommend you download them from the Companies House website. There's no effect on existing companies. They can keep the old rules if they want, but if they wish, they can also adopt the new. Other changes from the 1st of October 2007 are the director's duties. Remember, these were formerly in case law and they've been codified for the first time in the new Act. And the 1st of October 2007 is important because it is the beginning of these rules. And they include the duty to act in the best interests of the company, no conflicts of interest, and to exercise reasonable skill, care, and judgment. The changes from the 6th of April 2008 are important. The delivery time for reports and accounts have been reduced by 1 month for both private companies and PLCs. Private companies are being reduced from 10 months to 9 months, and PLCs 7 months to 6 months. And these will apply to all accounting periods commencing on or after the 6th of April 2008. There are some changes as well from the 6th of April which we do need to take into account when we're doing our report on accounts. The statements on the accounts have always included statements like prepared in accordance with the Companies Act 1989. That has got to change. They must now say that the report and accounts have been prepared in accordance with the Companies Act 2006. Abbreviated accounts are now in accordance with Section 444, and the report should state that they have been prepared in accordance with the regulations made by the Secretary of State. Audit exempt small companies with accounting periods starting on or after the 6th of April 2008 must also include a statement that the company was entitled to exemption from audit under, and here it goes, Section 477 of the Companies Act 2006 relating to small companies. Now, I'm not expecting you to furiously jot these down. All of this is on the Companies House website, and I reasonably expect you to go and have a look at those. Dormant companies also have changes which came into effect on the 6th of April 2008. They must now include a statement on the balance sheet that for the year ended, whatever, the company was entitled to an exemption from audit under, and here it goes, Section 480 of the Companies Act 2006 relating to dormant companies. Another change that came into being on the 6th of April 2008 was in respect of company secretaries. There is now an option for private companies as to whether they have one or not. If you're an existing company and you think that a company secretary really isn't worth anything, then you can tell Companies House by simply doing a bit of web filing on a 288B form. Incidentally, you may need to amend the articles depending upon the wording. Another thing that's quite important and very relevant for AAT clients is that a company can now have a sole director and no secretary if they wish. But if they do go for that path, it must be clear as to who is going to undertake the filing responsibilities which have traditionally fallen upon the shoulders of the company secretary. Another important change from the April 2008 is in respect of auditors' reports. For an individual auditor, the auditor's report will have to state the name of the auditor and be signed by him or her. If it's an audit firm, then you have to put on the report the name of the senior statutory auditor, the firm's name, and the audit report must be signed by the statutory auditor in his or her own name. April 2008 also sees new auditors' responsibilities. Section 507 of the Companies Act provides that it's an offence to knowingly or recklessly cause an auditor's report to include any misleading, false, or deceptive material, and those fines can go up to £5,000. There are also new responsibilities to notify appropriate authorities when an auditor leaves office. Well, that's the end of the changes from the 6th of April 2008. What about the changes from the 1st of October 2008? Well, there's quite an important new procedure in respect of objections to companies' name. And this is to address opportunistic registration, also known as blackmail. It's a little bit like cyber squatting, where you form a company, say Marks Spencer Limited, and Marks and Spencer's decides to object. Now, to help that process along, there is to be a new tribunal on companies' names where such problems can be taken. Another change from the 1st of October 2008 is in respect of what is referred to as new trading disclosure. Now, in plain English, that means, where must I disclose my company name? Well, you've got to do that at the registered office and also what's ominously referred to as the inspection place, which is the place where records can be seen. But it also needs to be registered at any place of business. Now, that obviously gives us a problem as AAT members because many people will work from home. But you'll be delighted to know that homes are exempt, so you don't need to have a brass plaque up on your front door. Dormant companies are now also exempt from the 1st of October. But you will need to reveal in business correspondence and documents, and that's either hard copy or electronic, your company name. So what do I need to display in my letters and my website? Well, that's pretty straightforward. You need to display the company name, the number, the place of registration, and its registered office address. Now, looking forward a little bit, what have we got? We've got two more implementation dates. The first of those is the 1st of February 2009. And the thing that I would like to draw to your attention are the revised late filing penalties for private companies. Up to now, if you filed late, it's been £100. Not anymore. The rates of penalties have risen dramatically. If you file late and you're not more than 1 month late, it's £150. If it's not more than 3 months late, £375. If it's not more than 6 months late, £750. But get this one, if it's more than 6 months late, £1,500. These are huge numbers. And incidentally, they apply to dormant companies as well. So what's left? Well, from the 1st of October 2009, which is the final implementation date for the Act, there are a number of issues that we need to address, the most important of which is the change of company name. You can do this in a number of ways, by resolution, by conditional resolution, and through the articles. The point here is that you need to send appropriate notice to the registrar, plus a small fee. But the other important change from the 1st of October 2009 is in respect of statements of capital, which have been described as a snapshot of capital at a given time. In corporations on or after the 1st of October 2009 will need to include a statement of capital. And also the statement of capital needs to be on the annual return. So what is this statement of capital? Well, very simply, it is required to show the total number of shares, the aggregate nominal value of those shares, and details of the different classes. Well, that's it for this brief update on the Companies Act. The Companies House website is packed with details, and if the issues raised in this podcast affect you or your clients, you need to look carefully. Good luck, and cheerio.